Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Y'all know how much that meant to me. I appreciate y'all. I love y'all. But the biggest thing, we got to get back to work, man. That was a hell of a win. We got to get back to the grind on the next week, man. Love y'all boys, man.
Honestly, it meant a lot to me. Held it in all week, energy-wise. Try not to bring it up too much. Obviously, we had an interview earlier in the week. I just try to keep it professional, but obviously, in the back of my mind, it meant a lot to me, and I wanted to do more showing than telling. You know, I play with a lot of passion and a lot of love. I can't say I didn't think about this game when I got traded. Wondered if we played him, and then obviously, it was on the schedule. But I take it one game at a time, and I knew when this game came about, I was just trying to take advantage and get a win for my team. But obviously, it's emotional. I can play with a lot of emotions.
Former Bills great Stephon Diggs, now Houston Texans contributor. More catches, more yards than the entire Bills receiver corps in this game. Bills lose. It is Buffalo Bills Football Monday, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Bills get hit over the top with a big Nico Collins touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You do wonder what would happen if he played the full game.
He's awesome.
He is awesome.
He did get a... I had him in fantasy. He got a nice fantasy day on two plays, right?
Yep.
Two targets, two catches. Diggs was fine. He was good.
I thought he was very good.
He was very good. He did a lot of the stuff we assumed, right? Like he would play middle of the field, underneath.
He made tough catches. He had some yak plays. He converted two third down plays for them.
Yep.
He got open. He got separation. He had quick timing catches.
Tank Dell was good in the first half.
Tank Dell was good. Yep. The Bills missed that. They missed that in their offense. Maybe that's Shakir now, but they missed that. And they certainly miss somebody on the outside that can do anything.
It's damning how much they miss Shakir. Khalil Shakir is a good player. You should not miss him this much. That you just simply should not miss him that much. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe those games would have looked almost exactly the same had he played. And he did play in the Raven game, remember? It's just that he was definitely banged up after he twisted the ankle or whatever happened. But, man, it shouldn't be that critical that that your offense looks that way when he leaves. We'll see. Maybe when he comes back, they'll still look that way.
For what it's worth, end of game management, watching this second down play over and over and over and over again, you know, you want to say hindsight's 20-20, that's fine. End of game management, I wonder when, if ever, people come for Josh Allen's end of game management rather than Sean McDermott's. Because on this series, I don't like that they threw it on first down, but they did.
Yep.
Now they need to throw it on second down or whatever. They need a first. When they're sitting there first and 10 with 32 seconds left,
yep.
My plan would have been keep the clock running three times, at least twice. Run it twice. They ran for more yards per carry than they threw yards per pass.
Yep.
Your best play is James Cook. I would hand it to James Cook on first down. I'd probably do it on second down. I'd probably do it on third down. And if that meant I go three and out and I punt to them so they have no timeouts, I take my chances there. Then passing three times. Yeah. Is it conservative? Yes. And you know what? If they ran three times and punted and the Texans were able to return the punt into field goal range, like McDermott probably gets crushed for that. But the reality is, on second and 10, the game management calls for, you need a first down here. All right? Let's put the guys out there quickly. Joe, run down the names of who was on the field for Josh Allen on this critical play.
All right, so from top to bottom, they have five receivers. Top of the field is Ty Johnson.
I'm sorry, who?
Tyler.
Who is out wide?
Ty Johnson.
Okay, it's a slight improvement from Latavius Murray last year.
Okay,
this positionless football the Bills are in love with.
Yeah.
Ty Johnson. You're the Texans. What do you think is going to happen there? You think the ball's going to Ty Johnson?
It would be amazing.
Okay, so it's Ty Johnson and then?
Tyrell Shavers.
Okay. And then?
Then it is...
Kincaid.
Then it's Mac Collins. And then it's Keon Coleman.
That is your five receiver set. your five pass catcher set.
Yep.
Okay, so what does Josh Allen do on this play? We need a first down. It doesn't really matter if the clock's going to move. Just need a first down. He has an easy button throw to Kincaid right away. It's as easy button an easy button throw could be. He also has one to Coleman if he times it and just rips the ball into Coleman. And they get 5 yards. Maybe someone breaks a tackle. Maybe they get their first down. Instead, Josh Allen, game management here, he goes for a 97-yard touchdown. That's kind of what he did. Right? He goes for the...
It
certainly looks a lot like the play that he and Hollins almost hit earlier in the game.
Where Hollins is in the slot, and he kind of like fades to the outside as he runs it up the field.
He couldn't bring it in. Yep. Allen goes for the big one. You want game management? McDermott wanted some game management there, and his quarterback let him down on that play. Yeah. In my opinion, that's a mistake from Allen.
It's a mistake from Allen. Is anyone surprised? Is anyone that stunned? There might be an argument to be made that you could criticize their coaching for believing he wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, we need the first. Your quarterback might do that. You got to know at all times he might, and maybe you just have to live with it.
Sometimes we love it.
Maybe that's the defense for running the ball on 2nd and 10, is my quarterback might just chuck this deep, and then I might be in really big trouble. There's also, I think, criticism on Brandon Bean's part for that play. Your quarterback, as I just compared to, the Incredible Hulk. You cannot stop him from turning green sometimes. So, you get some fast guys.
Yeah.
Get some guys that are open down the field. This play, it's almost never going to work. But it's more likely to work if you have someone that can run by the safety. Mac Hollins is not even past the safety when the ball arrives. You make it Xavier Worthy. Make it anybody. Whoever the modern-day DeSean Jackson is. Somebody that runs a 4-2-8
on this offense. That's supposed to be MVS, or it's supposed to be Curtis Samuel that has that speed, but they don't.
So just someone that Allen can throw the ball 100 yards out to that can run under it. Because Mac Hollins is not... I think the first play to Mac Hollins wasn't even as much on Allen as some think. I think part of that was Hollins is not fast enough to run under that ball. The pass has to be so perfect. Your margin for error is so slim. Just I think it's a roster build thing. I think it's a little bit of a coaching thing. And I absolutely think it's part that your quarterback just... Once in a while in those late game situations, the Chief playoff game, he's going to want it all.
Joe Burrow threw for 5 touchdowns and like a million yards against Baltimore and lost.
Lamar Jackson had a horrible fumble in overtime and somehow won.
Scott in Rochester. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. So I was one of the clowns calling for Joe Brady for president after the Jacksonville game. I'd like to wholeheartedly revoke that endorsement because from what I can see, he's becoming Ken Dorsey 2.0. And the script is very similar. Both of these OCs, they start out quite well, their first 2-3 games in the league, and all the defensive coordinators adjust, and they have nothing to fall back on. It's going the same as it did for Dorsey, and it's becoming very disheartening. And honestly, if I was Josh, and I think Josh would be well within his rights to force his way out of the organization the way things were going. They've had him for 6 or 7 years, just refused to go outside of the organization for an OC. They refused to move up McDermott, who's a defensive-minded head coach, which only gets you so much. I mean, who amongst us didn't see that third down blitz coming yesterday where Agumbawale just completely burned them and they picked up another first down? I mean, that was so, like, you knew it was going to happen. And I do think wide receivers are flawed. Bean has done this organization a tremendous disservice by not getting guys on the outside. I mean, I don't want to say you got CFL-level guys on the outside now, but they're not very good. But I don't think that's a fatal flaw. I think the fatal flaw continues to be Sean McDermott. Numerous examples. The Denver game last year with 10 men on the field. 13 seconds being the biggest one.
Well, communication. The common thread, Scott, between 13 seconds, the Denver game, and this game is communication with the defense in a very important moment when time is short. It's another communication issue. The play before the field goal with Dorian Williams and what they're doing there and what play call they're getting in and who's supposed to be on the field is another communication issue.
It's just, yeah, exactly. It's more of the same. We continue to keep doing the same thing and expect different results. That's insanity. And Going back to the offense, like, unless you've got a dynamite OC like Dable was, I mean, this offense has been absolutely lost since Brian Dable left. Sure, they get fat on, like, inferior opponents, the Dolphins, you know, they pad their stats there. But when it comes to playing good teams that have superior talent and superior coaching, this team is always second class, and it will be as long as McDermott is the head coach. That's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. And I think McDermott remains a good coach in general and a really good defensive coach. I don't think that changed yesterday. In fact, it might have been bolstered a little bit more, although Nico Collins going out probably helped quite a bit.
I mean, if a rookie safety doesn't make a mistake, they held the Texans' offense to 16 points.
Maybe. If Collins plays the whole time, they might have put up 40.
Right, and he also doesn't get hurt
for me,
on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's also this... You know, you said, like, the offense since Dable. What lessons do they take away? One of the things I said on these airwaves 1,000 times, when they won those games and Stephon Diggs did not put up big numbers, I said to you, Joe, and to everybody that would listen, if the lesson you took from that was that you don't need that player, that's a bad lesson learned. That is not the lesson you should have learned. Their offense did not go gangbusters once Joe Brady took over. We remember a win streak. They needed a late field goal to beat Easton Stick on the road.
Yeah.
They were in competitive games.
And they didn't put New England away until like the last drive of that game,
right?
In week 18.
That's right. They were not, Joe Brady took over and they were gangbusters.
They got a punt return in Miami.
Right?
Like,
and I don't know what the long-term identity is. I mean, you know, you mentioned Josh forcing his way out. I wouldn't worry about that for a second. Not really, not at all. But, man, especially because everybody likes Josh, and Josh likes everybody.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the whole one of the guys things. There was the story from training camp about how maybe they think it's his turn to take over the team. Diggs is gone, so Josh steps into the role as the alpha leader or whatever you want to say. Like, okay, but he likes to be one of the guys, and you wonder when and how he decides to ratchet that up. Is he cold enough to be like, one of my buddies has to leave this team because he can't hack it? I like that guy, but he can't play.
Like mid-season, you mean?
Too? Yeah, yeah. I mean anybody like that. Because if you get cozy with the quarterback, you're safe. You're going to get a job as a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
He seems to like all their draft picks. Maybe it's just noise. I don't know.
I mean,
like, I'm not down on Allen, of course. I mean, he's one of the best players in the entire league. But this belief that as long as you have him, you'll be good, that's not true for anybody. This is a sport with a lot of positions and a very specialized set of skills. You cannot roll out nobodies with Allen and think that's going to work. Anybody that came and said, look at how the Chiefs did it without any receivers. Again, wrong lesson learned. The lesson should always be lean into your strength. Josh Allen's one of your strengths. And they decided that, well, it's fine. We don't need any help around him. We'll get, I mean, Joe, the two boundary receivers yesterday are $1 million free agents. People refer to Curtis Samuel, by the way, as like, well, I mean, you're really not getting production out of an $8 million guy. $8 million is not much. It's
not.
Even that is a bargain receiver idea.
It's eight times more than Matt Collins.
It is eight times more than Matt Collins.
Is getting more snaps and targets.
I became fixated on the idea of Darnell Mooney in the last 2 weeks. He signed for $13 million. Darnell Mooney would flourish with Josh. Good, fast, speedy receiver runs down the field. And that's what Samuel's supposed to be, and we're not getting it yet. Frustration. I know. They're still going to win the division. Hey, Zoe.
Hey, how you doing? There's so much I kind of want to say, but real quick, like you said, they're not using all the players at their strength. You know, for example, that Mac Hollins throw that he dropped. Valdez-Scantling is the person, if you will do that, even though he's known for drops, not comeback routes. You got Coleman. You thought the guy like that in the red zone for jump balls. That guy in the red zone three times, didn't attempt none of them. He was, what, number one in the combine, in the Gutman drills? No drag routes with him at all. Matchups towards the end of the game. You want them to burn their timeout. You can't run the ball. You don't have James Cook out there to dump him the ball in space and show numerous of times when he get the ball in space, he could get a first down to get them to burn the timeout. You're not calling those up. At the end of the day, Josh Allen don't trust none of them. He don't trust none of them. That's why the ball didn't come out a second sooner. He not trusting none of them. He throwing the ball to guys in the back of their head. They're not in the right spot.
What a moment that was. So
it hit Coleman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Coleman. But he's getting frustrated, and he's holding the ball a tenth of a second because he's not trusting none of these players. You don't have Shakir out there. And then I didn't even know Knox even played. Some of them is some of his offensive play calling, too, because, like, that scene that Josh Allen slightly underthrew him, why don't you just go back to that? You could go right back to that. They were going back to the same plays.
Yep.
You started off the game with using James Cook, and they couldn't stop him. In that situation where that comeback route with that pass interference with Coleman, now it's time to dump it off to Cook to make them burn that timeout. You didn't do that. You want to challenge a play that Cook caught out of bounds, but you're not going to challenge a Kincaid catch?
I didn't think the Kincaid catch was a catch. I didn't think the Cook catch was either. I think so. The Kincaid catch, that would be a catch if he's in bounds. He's laying out of bounds. So he gets the feet down. If the ball's moving and being bobbled at all while you're out of bounds, that's out of bounds. I didn't have any problem with not challenging that. I thought they would have lost the challenge because he's out of bounds. If he's in bounds, that's a catch. Like the broadcast, they kept saying, does it hit the ground? Doesn't matter if it hit the ground.
Right.
Completing the act of making the catch is having control through it. And he didn't ever drop it, but out of bounds, that's not a catch, and in bounds it is. So, I mean, that was my thought on that. 803-0550. Got a text I want to read you here from Dan. I wonder how many people identify with this. Dan writes in, last drive was a watershed moment for how I think about this team. Give me 32 seconds to get 60 yards in 2021 or 2022, and I'll take my chances. Yesterday, before the drive even started, I was just hoping to survive a first down and get to overtime. I don't believe in them anymore. That's what you've done to your offense. I mean, there's also the worst day for the offense. You know, if they're at their own three against Jacksonville with no timeouts, maybe you like their chances, but Houston has a lot more talent defensively. Mo in New Jersey. Hey, Mo.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Mo.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys taking my call yesterday. You know, I had the Bills going, the Mets going. I'm thinking hopefully I get at least a split at worst. Both games get walked off on. Worst miserable day probably in a long time, but the reason I called is a couple of things. Number one, the end of game management, you guys nailed it. Some blame needs to be put on Josh. But McDermott's use of our timeouts when the Texans had their second to last drive almost sealed our fate. When he started using, I think he took one timeout, and they eventually got a third down conversion, I think it was. But then we punted. I'm thinking, okay, let's just get to overtime. Like your text message, the person you just read his text message was exactly what I was thinking. Let's just get to overtime and take our chances. We're fortunate to be in the situation we're in. Give our team credit for digging us out of the hole we put ourselves in and getting that game to where it was, where we could have went to overtime and gotten lucky. Maybe the coin flips our way, we win. But no, we take those three shots. Again, some blame on Josh. But like as the head coach, Sean McDermott is no longer calling the defense. He is officially, like, he's in charge of the team. He needs to know what's going on, and he needs to understand the situation. They got three timeouts. We can't take three knees. After that first incompletion, I'm like, and in my head, no matter what we do, they're going to get the ball back with time. And they did, and they kicked that 59-yard field goal, and the rest is history. The last thing I want to touch on is it's evident we need a true wide receiver, one.
Or a number two.
On the team.
And a number three. And a five.
So I give Shakir a little more credit than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know.
if you look at the history of in-season trades for wide receivers, they almost never work out. So whether a trade for somebody, it's not even going to move the needle for me, because at the end of the day, I think we're stuck with what we have right now. And I blame the front office for putting us in this position. We're wasting Josh Allen's prime, and this squarely falls on their shoulders. No matter how it works out the rest of the year, I think we've been exposed a little bit. And even if we make a trade, I'm not even going to swing for Devontae Adams. Maybe it's like somebody from the Panthers, Deontay Johnson, or maybe from, we're lucky, Amari Cooper from the Browns. But it's not. I don't think that type of move is going to make this season much different.
Well, Mo, we'll see. Like, who could the guys be? Right, it could be Devontae Adams. Could be Amari Cooper. Could be who?
Cooper might be the name. Cooper really might be the name, because there's a lot lining up there. He is on a team that stinks. The Browns got smoked by the Commanders yesterday. The one thing that the Browns are supposed to have is an elite defense. And Jaden Daniels is doing this to everybody to start his career, but he lit them up yesterday. 34 points. So you've got a team that is in free fall. A veteran, older receiver. What's Cooper? 30 years old? He's never as old as you think he is. Won a one-year deal. And the difference, why the reason I'm not holding my breath on the Adams trade that Greg Thompson pointed out from Cover One last week, that if the Raiders retain salary on Adams to make it work for a team like the Bills, it'll be the first time they've done that.
Yeah,
Mark Davis does not do that. You do not need that with Cooper. Cooper is like $1 million. It's not even $1 million, I think, for the Bills if they were to trade for him. So if that guy gets to the market, that is an outside perimeter receiver, maybe not as good as he once was, but is way better, I think, than anything they have on the outside right now.
Well, stat of the day for you. I'll make this the stat of the day. Again, the Bills, anybody that was trying to convince me, I think they don't want to pay a number one. I think they want to do it like this. I never bought it for a single second. And it's because this is a team in transition. You know, sometimes it's nice to remind ourselves of that. This is a team that's eating a ton of cap space. When you include the cap space eaten for Diggs, which you should, do you know where the Bills' cap ranking is in wide receiver expenditures?
Oh, it's got to be high.
Where are the Bills rank? 1 through 32 in dollars spent to have this receiver core this year.
They're like ninth.
Fourth. This is the fourth most expensive wide receiver group. Four.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have $30 million on a guy to not be here. Yep. Should we really expect anything different? Put it this way.
Cooper's not different from that.
Though. Let's pretend for a moment that the Bills have Diggs on the team, because it'd actually be a little bit less of a cap hit. And then Diggs and Shakir got hurt. That's what it would look like yesterday, was it not?
Yep.
If you put Shakir and Diggs on that team yesterday, what do? They just beat Houston. They're fine.
They win the game. They get the first down at the end, I think.
They probably get the first down. Not that we're getting Diggs back, but this team has the fourth most cap space allocated to wide receivers in the league. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. All right, Chris Brown, he had the call of the game. We'll get his perspective, see what he thinks about the final possession, about the path forward, too. That, to me, that's the big question moving forward this week and in the coming weeks. Are they going to do anything about it? Is there anything to do about it that isn't external help? Jeremy and Joe on a Buffalo Bills Football Monday. Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.